we have a panel that we are now going to bring up of very successful good guys. Jack Fullerton, Ward Hannigan, Randy Grigg, and Bill Tan. And do we have a handheld or two? Okay.
Hey, I made it.
You made it. Okay. How about one?
One at the other end.
Yeah, go ahead and sit down at the other. This one's going to be. Let me just sit here. I don't care.
I was going to sit there.
All right, be my guest.
Oh, you want this one?
No, I have one on.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's pretty bright, huh?
Boy, that's what I look at you all the time. Need some sunglasses. Where's David Granzella? Okay, he was just telling me earlier about how he's
The light?
Stand-up comedy, and he goes, oh, you can't see the crowd.
Yeah, it's bright up here. These lights they have to use for, I guess, when they tape it. I asked about that before. Thank you guys for doing this. Legacy panel. Bill Tan's cringing, but you know, I didn't know where Rick Solis, he griped about being on the young guys panel, but I didn't know where to put him. I looked at his head, he doesn't have any white hair, so all of these gentlemen are class people to me. And so it's not just that they've accomplished stuff. They seem to have accomplished it in a way that left a good legacy their family can be proud of. I'm excited about having them on the panel. Then we got taught by Jim Rohn that success leaves clues, so I have a feeling they're going to leave some clues today that might be valuable for everybody. Bill, just start with you. How did you get involved in real estate, and what year did you get involved in it?
I initially got involved in real estate in the 70s, and I had a fairly good experience. However, I was really brought up to get a job with a big company and work with a stable company for the insurance benefits and the retirement. So I had some success in real estate, but then I kind of drifted away from it. I came back about 1980.
Okay. Perfect, when interest rates were... Did that, by the way, okay, and that's interesting, was that what spurred some of the creativity?
Yes, absolutely
okay.
Did.
Okay, because it was, you couldn't really borrow money at 18% and probably be very happy.
Couldn't afford to borrow money. Mike was talking about the fact how he was, you know, happy to get his interest rate of 17.5%, and I'm going, how could he afford to make the payments? I couldn't afford to make payments at that interest rate.
Okay. Jack?
Well, I'm a water polo coach, and I'd gone to San Diego to go Hobie-Cat sailing. There was no wind, the only time in the whole world there was no wind. I was dragged to a seminar, sat in a room, had no interest in real estate except Jack Miller and John Schaub had flown out and took Jimmy Napier's spot. Guy twisted my arm to go to a class that was 3 days that I gave my teams off during Easter vacation. I went, was planning on leaving it halfway, stayed. Changed my life. I fell into some great people with the Academy of Real Estate, and it got me started. We bought our first house by borrowing $10,000 at 20%, $167 a month.
And what year?
1980. I did have a 21.5% loan at one time, and hopefully we'll never see it again. But I'm afraid we will.
I hope I'm a lender, not a borrower.
actually, Ray and I have talked about this many times in my mastermind group. We really would like to see interest rates go up because we can do better in high interest rates than we can in low interest rates.
Yeah, we're not rewarding people that have saved very well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Ward?
I got started in real estate in 1972. No, actually, 1970. I went to work for Countrywide. I was a loan solicitor. And go around to real estate offices, and I just wanted to stay in the office. I didn't want to go out and get more loans for Countrywide. So I went to work for an apartment brokerage. It was called Chula Vista Commercial Realty. And wow, I found my home. I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. I was 42 years old, guys. I didn't know until I was 42 what I wanted to do. And so I became fascinated with it. I got a Hewlett-Packard 12C and, I just was nuts. I was working 7 days a week, made lots of money. And that felt good, too. So I went from there. The story didn't stop with me as far as buying and selling apartments until 1982, and that's when this god-awful interest rate went up that Jack likes so much. Mm. And I couldn't sell diddly squat. You know, buying an apartment's elective. You don't have to have an apartment. And if you don't have to have it, you're not going to spend, 15 to 18% interest for this stupid stuff. So that's when I got into foreclosures, because I learned about foreclosures in 1976, but I was so busy making money selling apartments that I didn't want to stop that and start the foreclosures. So I had all the time in the world in 1982, so I've been fooling with foreclosures ever since.
Okay. Randy?
My wife and I actually moved to Bakersfield from Riverside. Actually, we were going to school, both of us. I got my master's degree at UC Riverside, and she was studying her doctorate program in Spanish. So I was hired by a big company, and we moved to Bakersfield. I was a pest control advisor for FMC, a big, large company. And pretty much immediately when we got to Bakersfield, we bought our personal residence. Just to give you an idea, this is 1977, and that residence cost $37,500, just to give you an idea of where we're at here. It was a three-bedroom, one-bath, 1,000 square feet, and we also, in the same year, bought our first rental house. It was a two-bedroom, one-bath, $22,000, and 10% down, 8% interest over 20 years. And from there, I didn't like the corporate life after a year and a half, and I started my own pest management service to the farmers that I was servicing. Ended up with 30,000 acres of ground that I would service, and we bought houses along the way each and every year. We bought like 1 to 3 houses for about 25 years, and once we hit our mark, we stopped and didn't buy any more houses, and now most of the loans have been paid off, so we generate some pretty good cash flow.
Okay. This question I asked the other panels, and I think it's important. When you got in the business, what was your best asset that you brought to the business, and what was your biggest weakness?
I always believe my greatest asset is that when I come across a challenge, I find ways to overcome it.
Okay.
And greatest weakness was that I had absolutely no experience or knowledge about business and didn't realize that real estate really is a business. So profit and losses, I didn't understand those. I'd been working for people before that.
Okay. Jack?
Well, first of all, I want to share one thing. You see this turkey to my right? He's not wearing a pink shirt. Well, it's got a little pink, does it?
Yes, it does.
Ward and I became good friends because we both took the same seminar, I think, in 1982 or 3, and we went to lunch together, and we've been good friends ever since. So you, people you're sitting around, get to know them. I have some of my best friends I met sitting next to them at a seminar. My greatest strength. As a swimming coach, I used to win meets by moving a backstroker into the 500 or doing something like that. So my best strength is reorganizing finance in such a way that I can make something that doesn't look like it'll work, work. And my weakest problem is I have no idea how to fix a house. So I have to count on other people. And I've been very lucky up to now to have some of the greatest people as my handymen that had high integrity. Remember, your integrity always walks in front of you. That's bought me a bunch of houses, because somebody knows I'll do what I say I will do.
Okay. Yes. Ward?
So his name is Turkey, huh?
Yeah, Turkey. I love you.
The old gobbler. Let's see. I think my greatest asset is, is diligence. It paid off for me famously through my life. I graduated from UCR with a degree in economics and a minor in Spanish. How's that?
Wow.
And so I was hired by IBM. I became their rising star, won all kinds of contests, this and that. Not because I was bright. I just found it fascinating, and I liked it, and I just had to know everything about it. IBM had a sales contest once, and you could go to Hawaii or their typewriter factory in Lexington, Kentucky. Guess what I picked? Typewriter factory. So after that, my wife said, we're going to both decide where we go on vacation. For example, when I got into foreclosure, I just absolutely had to know every single phase of foreclosures, from raising cash and research and bidding at the sale and rehabbing it and regaining possession and then reselling it. You know, you notice all those things start with R, right? So, what's my worst, what's Ward Hannigan's largest disappointment with Ward Hannigan? Mm. And so my disappointment is that I didn't become more well-rounded. I didn't, when I went to school, I wish I had taken some delegation classes. I'm a control freak. If I had learned how to...
Do we have that in common? Is that what you're...
We found the members of Controlaholics Anonymous.
I'd be there, I'll tell you. But if I had to do over again, I would really study how to become good at delegating to qualified people.
Okay.
I would say, my wife might disagree, but I would say my best attribute would be toughing it out, because this business is not easy, and there's a lot of problems along the way. Trust me, if you're a landlord, you will have a lot of problems. The buying part's fairly easy. I was pretty easy. It was easy for me to buy. I didn't have much marketing stuff coming in, but the ad that I had in the paper developed enough leads where I could buy 1 to 3 properties every year. Developing systems is another thing that I think I was pretty good at, that kind of thing. I was pretty poor at everything else. I was not a great manager. I was not a great negotiator. I had a lot of things that I didn't do well at, quite honestly, but I stuck in there. And the key for all of us is we need to do that. We need to stick in there. If you're going to be a landlord, you're waiting till that day that the mortgage pays off so you get the cash flow that puts you to another level. Instead of $200 a month, you'll make $800 a month or $1,000 a month in positive cash flow. And that's when it gets fun.
That's a big change.
I'm
going to ask another question that's similar, but first, your favorite real estate trainer and why? And then I'm going to follow that up with the most influential person in your life. But we'll do the first one. And if it's the same one, that's the same person, that's fine. But Bill, favorite real estate educator?
Without question, my favorite real estate educator is John Schaub.
Okay.
He's out of Florida, out of the Tampa area, Sarasota. And the reason is he explains things just so clearly, so simply. He makes everything extremely simple to understand. And he can do that with just the most complicated of things.
Okay.
First one is who?
Just answer the real estate one.
Unfortunately, real estate. I have five.
Okay.
I could have done that too.
Yeah. But I was lucky enough to fall into the Academy of Real Estate. Warren Harding was the leader of that. He's passed away. But I'd say the most influential, because I've traveled around the world with him so much, is Jack Miller. But I also go skiing with John Schaub every year. Jimmy Napier is a close friend. And Peter Fortunato is also a close friend. And those are my five mentors. And I've become very close friends with, because I work for free. I'll do anything to get the education. To heck with the money. The money comes later. And I'll leave you with one last thing. That first house that I borrowed $10,000 at 20% is less than a mile from here. And I did it all wrong. It's got a broken foundation. I don't know whether it's rolling to the east or west today. But it's only 1 mile from here. So I hear all these people buying thousands of houses. We don't buy a lot because ours are so darn expensive. When Jimmy Napier had 80 houses at $25,000, I had 20 at 100,000. Today, those are a lot more. and influence.
No. We'll do that next.
You said
one. We'll do that next. I just wanted the real estate one first.
Oh, and then the second one afterwards.
Yeah, got afterwards, it. Yeah.
I'm not listening well.
Here, Beck. Tell them that you're still teaching.
Who?
Tell them the three are still teaching.
The what?
Tell them that.
Bill, you're messing this up, buddy.
Oh, the ones that are still teaching are John Schaub, Peter Fortunato, Jimmy Napier, and that's the only three that are still around, unfortunately.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd have to say that the same three that you like, they're handsome. But I had Schaub I liked. Jack Miller with his deals and all that kind of stuff. But anyways, I remember I took Eric, my son, to a Jack Miller meeting, and I almost lost him for foreclosures. He said, all the guy talks about is a deal this and a deal that. And I said, okay. Anyways, Schaub was great. Jimmy Napier, I learned a fascination with amortization and calculators and stuff like that. And Fortunato, I'm amazed at that guy. You could call him up down in Florida, and he wants you to call. And you can give him the most complicated problem you think you've got, and he knows it frontwards and backwards and will tell you what he would do. And he doesn't want anything for the consultation. I think that's fine. That's amazing. You know, his home. I'll answer questions in the office, but I sure in hell don't want to do that at home if I want the same wife I've got. So.
Okay. Randy.
Well, this is going to sound strange, but I got involved in real estate. Full-page ad. Talk about full-page ads. In the L.A. Times. A guy was leaning against his Mercedes, and it said, the guy's name was Mark Harrelson, and he wrote a book, How to Wake Up the Financial Genius Inside You. Now, this guy's declared bankruptcy and everything else after that, but I got involved in it because of that book. It talked about how leverage is, how you can put a low down payment and the property would go up 10%. If you put 10% down, you'd make 100% on your money. I thought that was pretty cool. But then I actually graduated in 1983. I took John Schaub and Jack Miller's Making It Big in Little Deals, with Little Deals. And they became my mentors, along with Bruce. Bruce taught me a lot about buying and selling property and about foreclosures. And he had a class buying systems as well. So I learned a lot from Bruce and those other two guys. And then, of course, Peter Fortunato, who's been talked about, I ran into him as well.
Okay. The second question, most influential person.
Wow. I'm going to use two.
Would it be mentor or person? Which is
the
better?
It'll be person.
Okay.
I'm utterly grateful to my father. My father grew up without a father, and he always promised that his children would have a father, and remain so till this day. Been a wonderful guiding light. However, even stronger mentor was his mother, my grandmother, my fraternal grandmother. I call her a pistolera. She was born and raised in Independence, Missouri. She couldn't wait to get out, so she married my grandfather, who was of Chinese descent, and he took her back to Indonesia, where my father was born. And she did not like living there. So when the possibility came up, she left, and she left my grandfather in the middle of the Depression with my father in tow, and she came back to the United States and started right from scratch. And I always like to tell the story that I had been doing the note business, not knowing any idea what I was doing in the 80s, and then I took a class at the end of the 80s and then 1990, and I felt at that point that I'd learned what I'd already been doing enough to go out and do it as a business. So I went to my grandmother, and I know she had some money set aside, and I invited her to be, you know, an investor of mine in buying seller financed notes and mortgages. And she said, "Oh, honey, I've been doing it for years. What do you want to know about it?"
Well, I'd have to say my mother, because my mother and my father got divorced when I was 4. She raised us properly. She held me back, didn't let me play and do a lot of things that other people did, which was a blessing. She led me to the gentleman that helped me become Eagle Scout. She led me to a place where I swam for a coach who took me from a nothing to All-American. And then I went to UCLA and was lucky enough to get into a fraternity. One of my brothers was Danny Crum, who played basketball for John Wooden. So I was lucky to be in the John Wooden, or around the John Wooden program. I still have his personal phone number, but of course he's passed away. Had a great deal of influence. I talked to Danny many times about what they did the day before the national championship, and they did their basic fundamentals. So fundamentals has always been a key for me. When I wrote a newsletter, it was called Money Fundamentals. It's been out of print for 20 years. But I think that those people did more to lead me into the integrity that I've been able to use all my life.
Thank you.
Well, this is an interesting question because some of you know I'm an orphan kid. I was put in an orphanage when I was 4 months old. I got out when I was 11, and when I was about 8 years old, an Aunt May, who I met for the first time, came from New York, and she was going to take her sister's poor kids out of the orphanage for a summer. So Aunt May showed up with a great big yellow Packard. It was huge. I called it the banana boat. And I was always a wise-cracking type of person. I know this surprises you. from my first days in the orphanage. And the orphanage was fantastic. Please do not feel sorry for Ward Hannigan being brought up in an orphanage, because it was a secure, safe place. And I was always doing my hijinks in the orphanage, so no problem. And I had a captive audience. So, but Aunt May came and got us, and my brother, who's 2 years old, 2 years and 4 months older, he took the back seat of that big car and whispered to me when Aunt May couldn't hear, "Keep out of the back seat, you little shit." Okay. And so I sat up front with Aunt May. It was the greatest thing that ever happened to me in the world. And we drove from Syracuse up through Niagara Falls and across Canada until we got to Detroit, Michigan, and then dropped down from Detroit into Chicago, where she then deposited us with her sister, her middle sister, and that was Aunt Ruth. So we were in the summer spending time with Aunt Ruth. She was looking us over. I didn't know, seeing if she would take us out permanently. And she didn't have to wait too long. She decided to send us back. Oh, back to the orphans I went. But anyways, Aunt May was like some kind of, I don't know, apparition or something. I mean, she was crazy because she loved talking to me. And so while we're driving through Canada, I'm in the front seat, she's the driver's seat, and we're going back and forth and talking about anything she wanted to. And she then turned to me one time and she said, "Ward Hannigan, I'm not going to worry about you ever again." I couldn't believe she even thought about me. But and she says, "You're the smartest kid I've ever, ever have met. You're going to be rich someday. No kidding." And I believed Aunt May without reservation. She gave me the greatest gift that ever happened to me, because through my whole life since then, when I run a rough spot, I would just say, "Well, this is temporary. I'm on my way to be rich," you know. And so, and I forgot that I learned that from Aunt May. And so years later, I'm quite a reader too. Years later, I was reading the book, The Gift of Fear. It's still in sells in the bookstores. And this guy's talking about how we, where did these monsters come from that kill our kids and loved ones and this and that? What the hell makes them tick and blah, blah, blah? And he said that most science says that these are people who, when they were brought up, were abused and made feel worthless. They were abused physically, or they were abused verbally, or a combination of the two, sexually, you name it. And so they thought they were worthless. And then in the book he says, well, that can't be the total reason why, you know, because he says there's a lot of people that are abused and turn out great, turn out happy, and turn out very adjusted. And he says, what I think the reason is that somebody, when they were still very, very impressionable, like Ward Hannigan, okay, had an adult tell them that they were worthwhile. And when I was reading that book, I dropped it on the floor. I was so surprised, because instantly the memory of Aunt May came back to me. And my wife says, "What's the matter, honey?" And I said, I can't believe it. I can't believe what impact that had on me. So that was the greatest
thank you.
Thing I had.
By the way, that's why I had to. I had to word the question to get that story out, because I wanted that story told. When we have taped interviews with each of them, and when he did that story, I'm crying on the other side. The Aunt May story got to me, but I wanted to make sure he told that today, but I had to ask the question. I knew if I said mentor, it wouldn't come out. So, okay. Randy.
I was very fortunate in that I had two great parents. They came from Canada and settled in California and raised me, I think, the right way. My dad was a strict disciplinarian, so I learned that, you know, what was right and what was wrong very quickly. But really, my mentor is my wife of 39 years. She she's amazing. She's of Italian descent. Now, I'm English. Italians tell it like it is. If you're not doing things right, she's going to let me know. But you know what? She's honest. And that's the key, is she tells me, "You know, why don't you try this?" I mean, she's diplomatic about it, but sometimes. But she has moved me into areas that I should be and taken me out of areas I shouldn't be. And so she's really my soulmate. In fact, it's her birthday this weekend, and we're celebrating her birthday.
Very cool. What was the toughest time that you had in business, and how did you solve it?
And by the way, I want to thank you. I forgot to add my mother. Both my parents are my role models. My toughest time was very early in real estate. I bought some properties here in the 80s, and I did okay with them. Then I got the idea to buy properties out of the area, including out of the state. And I learned some really, really good lessons. One was that I really wasn't very good at property management. I'd never taken that course. Mike's got a very good course on that, by the way. And whenever I had a problem, it would take one day to fly there, hopefully one day to take care of it, and one day to fly back every time there was a problem. And I had lots of problems over there. So I finally learned that I did not like being an out-of-area property manager and owner of properties, so I sold them all. And at the time I sold them, the only way I could sell them was to help provide the financing. And so I did what's called carryback financing, seller financing. And all of a sudden, voila, didn't hear about tenants, didn't hear about toilets, didn't hear about turnover. And the worst problem I had was getting a paper cut opening up the envelope. And I said, I like this. And that led me right into the note business.
Okay.
I'd like to change subject just for a split second. I think I have something really, really important. When you say downtime, probably the last 3 weeks. 3 weeks from Monday, I was on the floor, could not get up. I had been able to walk very, very well before that. So what had happened, we've had a change in our life since February. Mary and I were skiing for 2 weeks. So things have changed very quickly for us. Mary's gone into early Alzheimer's. We lost her father that way. I became overwhelmed, overexhausted, and dehydrated. I reached under my sink, shaving to go to the doctor. I rolled back, did not have a stroke. But you notice I keep looking at my phone because I'm starting to forget stuff because I'm so overwhelmed with everything. And so becoming financially independent, make sure that you don't get to a point where we are. Our life changed just instantly in the last 6 months. And I was in the hospital 3 weeks ago, this coming Monday and Tuesday. So I'm happy to be here. You might have seen me struggle to get up here, and hopefully Bill will help me get off the stage.
Okay.
But other than that,
and by the way, just interjecting, I want you to know how many people you've affected in this audience. You've given a lot of us a start that we would have never had and influence. So.
Thank you very much. Thank you. How many people ever attended a Commonwealth meeting? Would you raise your hand or stand up?
Wait a minute. How many people whose lives have been affected by Jack Fullerton? Please stand up. Yes. Yeah. I'm going to take this moment because I asked for permission beforehand. He's been the most influential to older investors. I have to use that term. By his opening of the Commonwealth. And he gave, like me and others like me who run real estate clubs, I run two clubs, the blueprint on how to do it successfully and protect the people who come to the meetings. And we can't thank him enough for that. Bruce and I both felt like the old Johnny Carson show, when comedians would get on, that was the epitome. Well, if you got to speak to Jack's club, because the way he vetted you beforehand, that was really saying something. So when he asked me to speak, I was all right. And I remember Bruce saying the same thing. And I know Ward, he knew you for a long time. I talked to my friend Mike Cantu back there earlier, and he said, and he did this to almost all of us, he introduced me to the people who changed my life, the Florida Four, Jimmy Napier, Jack Miller, John Schaub, and Peter Fortunato, and Bruce. I wouldn't have met Bruce if it wasn't for him, and others. Mike says, without Jack, I'd be somewhere else. Think about that. Really. I would like to end this section by, remember how he said John Wooden? Well, John Wooden was my one of my idols. And what John Wooden always was asked, he was asked about his championship teams and how did you feel about, you know, who's the best player, who's your favorite player, you know, wasn't it wonderful you had these great players? And John Wooden always answered, he says, I won't know until after the next 20 years how they've turned out. Well, 20 years later, some of us have turned out pretty well, Jack. Cool.
Well, as an aside, I'll just have to say that...
I knew this wasn't going to be easy, you know that.
Jack was... he's pivotal in my life. He maybe doesn't even realize it. Two things that I just... gives me greater satisfaction than anything in my life. And if I hadn't met Jack, that wouldn't have happened. And the first one was, he calls me out of the blue... in San Diego, I didn't know him from Jack Banana, and he wanted me to speak at his club he called the Commonwealth. I thought that was kind of a corny name, but anyways, I had to explain to him that I was not a public speaker. I never took speaking in high school, in college, or anywhere else, and that, so sorry, but that's not in my repertoire. And he wouldn't take no for an answer. He said, Ward, look, he said, my more, worthwhile guy, you know, is not showing up. And so I need a substitute. And so the bottom of the barrel will be fine.
I'd asked him to speak about 5 to 8 times before, and he wouldn't do it.
And so finally, you know, I couldn't stand hearing him whine and cry, so I finally decided, okay, I'll do it, you know. And so I went up and spoke at his group. And this is the first time I ever spoke in public, and I spoke in front of his group. And... when it was done, there was about 20, I think, or 25 guys there. I got a standing ovation. And it felt thrilling. I don't know if your hair ever prickles up in the back of your neck when you hear the Star Spangled Banner or something like that at a baseball game. Wow. And everybody's coming up, patting me on the back. And I thought there was 16 million things I didn't say, you know, that they didn't even hear. And, blah, 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 blah. And in that meeting, there was a guy named Greg Metcalf. And he's a 28-year-old kid, still lived at home. His job was janitoring a couple of old office buildings, right?
Yeah.
So he lived at home. Even though he loved his folks, he lived at home because he had to live at home. He didn't make enough money. Anyways... I gave another talk up in that area of somebody was in Jack's audience who said he was a program coordinator for a thing called ACRE, Area Congress on Real Estate, which was for the Al Lowry and Robert Allen. Robert Allen and Al Lowry's after seminar local group. So I spoke with them because now I like this stuff. And... there's Greg Metcalf again. And so Greg wanted me to train him. And I said, are you crazy? I don't train. I've never trained anybody. I wouldn't know the first thing to do. Go find yourself a trainer somewhere else, you know? And he's like Jack. He wouldn't take no for an answer. And finally, just to get rid of him, I said, okay, I'll train you. But, you know, that this is... you know, it's just, you're not going to follow a polished guy. I'll teach everything I know, and only because you're in Orange County, and you promised not to come down and compete with me in San Diego. So he says, okay. And I find I love those two activities more in my life than just about anything else. and one is public speaking. Why, I have no idea to this day why I enjoy it, but it's fun, and I just, and training. I love training. I love pouring my, what they value is important into them and seeing them blossom. So thank you, Jack. Okay. My.
Let's give Randy a chance.
Well, you said you wanted to know my worst mistake. What was the question?
Well, you have a better memory than I thought. What was the toughest time? Well, I thought you had discovered. What was the toughest time that you had to face in the business?
Toughest time I had to face in the business taught me a fabulous lesson, and that's when you get an unexpected ugly in one of your properties. You buy foreclosures, most of you probably know, you don't get to see the inside. You're buying a pig in a poke. You're going by what's on the outside. Every once in a while, that comes back to bite you. You know, there's a hold of China in it, or cracked slabs or foundation problems and stuff like that. And I remember that I was prone, if I had a problem, to want to get away from it, to duck it, to not talk about it. But yet, wait a second, it's on my desk, and I've got investors and on. And I learned that it's never going to go away. It's going to be there when I wake up in the morning until I correct it. And so I learned that lesson, and I jump on problems exceedingly fast. I'm very proud of that. I just will not suffer a problem any longer than I have to. And if I got bad news, I telegraph bad news to my investors or whoever else is depending on me instantly. I don't hold it back. I can't get to the phone fast enough to tell them, hey, I screwed up here. We got a house that's, is going to take $20,000 more to fix.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
Well, that gives you a lot of credibility, too. Randy, how are you?
Good. Nice to be here, Bruce.
Do you remember the question?
I think so. I think I do, sort of.
We can help you out.
Okay. Lou Gehrig. Yankee Stadium. I'm the luckiest man on the face of this earth. I am the luckiest man on the face of this earth also. We are going to go through trials and tribulations every single day. There's nothing that we can't overcome. Because you set your mind to it knowing that the problem's right around the corner. I mean, we have tenant problems virtually every day. We have problems with family every day. But what we try to do the best we can is to, I'm a Christian, and God is a big part of my life as well. So when I have a problem, I'm going to God first. I guarantee you, I'm going to God first. What do I do in this situation? And that really helps, to have a good wife, to have God, and knowing that you're going to have problems every day. So that's how I get through it.
You must have some really bad tenants.
Yes, I do.
I'm just kidding. Okay, well, because of the fullness of your answers.
Some of our answers.
I will ask only one more question, and this would be, if we could stay on topic, it would be so good, but but this one's important. If you had to do it over again, what would you do differently, or would you say, I'd keep the same game plan? Bill?
Wow. I have to say, as much as I didn't care for the bumps in the road, I'd do it all over again, because it's what I, like Jim Rohn says, it's what you become from learning from those bumps in the road, the person you become along the way. And so I wouldn't change a thing other than maybe marry my life's partner a little sooner.
Okay.
I think what I would do is I'd immediately get on the street, just like we rented up to a tenant last Saturday night. The last thing we said, and I'll say it because people haven't ever thought of this. If you see anybody in the neighborhood who'd like to sell a house, give us a call. And we bought three or four houses that way. And they said, well, a house at the end of the street's for sale by owner. And we happened to have to go back to the house we just rented to find out how to open the garage with the combination. So we were going there right after we had finished the rent up on Saturday. We got down to the property, we made a U-turn at the cul-de-sac, and there was this for sale by owner, a house which I had watched being fixed up years ago, talked to him many times. I had a lady who I'd like to come live with us, who's a nurse and also a real estate investor, in the car. We got out of the car, and they immediately said, we could live here. We knocked on the door. He said, are you still interested in selling your home? We walked in, showed this around. 2 hours later, we had agreed on the price, and the guy wanted to shake my hand to make it a deal. Now, that's the way I like to deal. That will close next week. We're in escrow right now. I'm sure it will close. We don't need any paperwork. We got paperwork, and we're having it filled out in escrow. So I would go back on the street. In fact, I don't go on the street anymore because I buy too many houses. I don't want any more. You know, it just so happened I had decided I was going to buy one or two more. And so this is the perfect house for me. Some people wouldn't like it because I can hang my rental sign off the back fence of this, and there's two or three lanes going behind it. That's a bad place to be. Not true. Brave Reese and I both agree. Sometimes it's not a bad place to be. But I can hang my rental sign off the back of this house when I have rentals in my town, because you have to own the house where you hang your sign. They won't let you hang it on somebody else's 24/7, but you can hang it on your own. So for me, that was a great house. We came to a deal. We got it done. We didn't do anything fancy. We just got it done. But when you get to the end of the time, you don't buy everything with a $100 bill like I used to. You sometimes pay all cash. I've learned that from Ray, who's 80. He's 83, and he's been doing it 50 years. I hope I answered. Back on the street, walking the streets, talking to people. That's my style.
Okay. It wouldn't change. Got it.
You should try dingbats. It's better than that. You don't have any vacancies except once every 16 years. Oh, yeah. My favorite saying Jack said is, what did I say all the time sometimes is, my quote is, you know, what you think is good is really bad. And what you think is bad is really good. And I'm serious. That's really, really the way it's been in my life. When initially what I thought was good, everybody else thought it was good, and they beat me to the lunch, you know. And what you think is bad, you know, nobody wants, and wow, you have no competition. So there's that. What would I do if I was going to do all this over again, as far as real estate's concerned? And that would be, I would want to start a lot sooner. I didn't get into real estate till I was 1972. I was 32. I would have gotten into, in fact, I probably would have dropped college. The degree didn't do Tinker's Dam for me, I don't think. And so I would have gone straight from high school, and I would have, just like, what's his name? Down in Florida?
John Chung?
No.
Peter?
Peter Fortunato. I would have gone right from high school, right into real estate. And I would have enjoyed it immensely. So that's what I would have done.
Thank you guys for staying on topic. Pretty good.
I'm going to make it real easy. I don't think I'd change anything. My life's been good, and I wouldn't buy any more houses faster. I bought one to three every year, and I just kept on accumulating them. And after 25 years, I stopped buying houses. And because you don't need, you only need enough to supply the income necessary for you to live the way you want to live. So I'm there. Real estate got me there, and I'm very grateful that I got there and that I went through the necessary steps to push to get there. You have to really keep in mind the total picture. It's amortization more than anything, which leads to cash flow. And you have to remember, I got so excited when I saw mortgage statements. I mean, well, the properties haven't gone up for the last 10 years in Bakersfield. Mark Harrelson said they were going to go up 10% a year. Well, and I looked at the mortgage statement, I saw, you know, my mortgage was paid down $50 this month. And then after, you know, 10 years, it's paid down like $300 a month. And I got so excited about that because I was building true equity, not equity through appreciation, but equity through amortization. And when that day comes and the property is paid for, it's really exciting.
Well, we have run out of time. I hope, I know there was value. I love these guys. I respect them all. So let's give them a big hand, and thank you very much.